One of the main reasons for Bitcoin's success is something that resonates with us as humans on a much deeper level. The primal elements of its brand, which, when combined, turn it into a belief system. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to the show. We have got a great piece today reading, and also thank you for voting this one up. Moved it to the top of the list at bitcoinaudible.com/vote. Throwing some sats in on this one. It's been really kind of cool to see what you guys actually want to hear. If you want to play around with Lightning, this I hope is kind of a fun tool and a way for me to know which ones y'all actually want to hear. My backlog is always pretty crazy. I've just added Sovereignism Part 2 from Breedlove, which we've hit Part 1 already. The Schumpeterian Bitcoin Cycle, talking about creative destruction and the halving cycles. Then a piece from Mises that I thought was really good on the battle between Leviathan and Liberty. Then Kreese's recent piece on Bitcoin and the American West, and how Bitcoin is the new frontier, and drawing a lot of analogies between that. And then lastly, a piece by Agora Brewing that I thought was really cool, and I haven't heard a lot of people mention, but it's about monetary fallacies, the fallacies of money and their origins. I just like all these pieces a lot. I hope to get all of them in audio, but you know, if there's one in particular that you can't wait for and you really want to hear, check out bitcoinaudible.com/vote. Today's piece is by Paolo Sacramento, and it is on the seven primal elements of the Bitcoin brand, which is kind of Patrick Hanlon's primal branding theory, I guess you could say. And it's a really interesting thing, like breaking down the main elements of a belief system, of a brand, and that this is exactly what these things are, that the Bitcoin origin story, its creed, its icons, its rituals, its enemies, and the example set by its leader creates this strong, lasting belief system and allows it to be valued above any individual in the community. And that's exactly why things of this nature truly last. Before we get into it, a quick thanks to SwanBitcoin.com for always automatically stacking my sats for me. I do it every week. Plus any great instant buy opportunity whenever I've got some extra fiat. SwanBitcoin.com/guy to set up your automatic plan, plus $10 in free sats when you sign up and you support this show. Then, of course, a thank you to the Bitbox, Bitbox02 from Shift Crypto, for keeping my Bitcoin safe after my automatic Swan withdrawal. It is open source hardware, very easy to use, and sleek looking wallet. I highly recommend it, especially if you are new to the hardware space. This one's not at all intimidating, like some of them can be. 5% off with the coupon code GUI, G-U-I. With that, let's get into today's read, and it is titled The Seven Primal Elements of Bitcoin by Paolo Sacramento. Seven primal elements of Bitcoin have combined to turn it into a belief system. The seven primal elements of the Bitcoin brand. People tend to be dismissive about new forms of money. This makes absolute sense, because the value of a monetary asset resides primarily in the fact that other people are already using it. In this sense, any attempt at introducing a new form of money into the world has very slim chances of succeeding. In modern world history, governments have had a monopoly over money creation initiatives. Just imagine how everybody would react if a new monetary asset were to show up. If that asset were not even backed by a nation state, its chances of success would be even slimmer. So, how has Bitcoin grown so fast in just 10 years? There are several answers to that question. Most of them emphasize Satoshi's genius of combining different technologies in a very unorthodox way. However, because of my history degree and interest in anthropology, I would like to focus on something that has nothing to do with Bitcoin's technical aspects. In this article, I will argue that one of the main reasons for Bitcoin's success is something that resonates with us as humans on a much deeper level. The primal elements of its brand, which, when combined, turn it into a belief system. The idea that some brands are actually belief systems was advanced by Patrick Hanlon, and I first learned about it from his TED Talk. For those who have not watched it, the following quotes of primal branding will help you understand its core proposition. Quote, "All belief systems have seven pieces of code that work together to make them believable. The more pieces, the more believable the belief system becomes. When products and services have all seven pieces of code, the creation story, the creed, the icons, the rituals, the pagans or non-believers, the sacred words, and the leader, they become a meaningful part of our culture." End quote. The seven pieces of primal code create together a sustainable belief system that provides the unarticulated, intangible, emotional glue that attracts people and helps them feel that they belong. This sense of belonging manifests itself in evangelist tribes, cults, members of political parties, product geeks, and enthusiasts. Now that we know what primal branding is about, let us examine how each one of these elements are expressed in the Bitcoin brand. 1. Story. Satoshi Nakamoto was the pseudonym used by Bitcoin's creator or creators. No one knows his real identity, and we will probably never know. His anonymity and sudden disappearance fascinates people and has attracted much attention. Satoshi envisioned a new kind of monetary network that had almost no chance of working out. All previous attempts to achieve something similar had failed. He sought help from a cryptography mailing list, which was one of the few places where he could obtain help and be understood. Even there, he faced harsh criticism and disbelief. One of the few supporters was Hal Finney, who died of amyotrophic lateral sclerosis a few years later. For almost 2 years, Bitcoin was exchanged back and forth between curious users. These coins were often given away in Bitcoin faucets and had no market value. Such humble beginnings serve as a source of inspiration and motivation for Bitcoin enthusiasts. 2. Creed. Bitcoiners have the shared belief that every person can be their own bank, and that no government or entity can affect the Bitcoin network's monetary policy. For them, Bitcoin is the native money of the internet. It is secure, borderless, neutral, and censorship-resistant. The believers feel compelled to get together and to share the good news of Bitcoin with their family and friends. This doctrine is deeply rooted in the cypherpunk ethos, which can be summarized in the following quote. Quote, "The computer can be used as a tool to liberate and protect people, rather than to control them." Hal Finney. 3. Icons. The Orange B, along with the physical cassatious coins, have been used extensively as symbols for this new internet money. 4. Rituals. Bitcoiners celebrate special occasions through meetups and over the internet. The first special day in the Bitcoin community is January 3, 2009, the day the Genesis block was mined by Satoshi Nakamoto. This event marks the official birth of the Bitcoin blockchain. The second special day is May 22, 2010, also known as Bitcoin Pizza Day. On this day, the first real-world purchase paid in Bitcoin was completed by Laszlo Hynek, who bought two Supreme pizzas for 10,000 Bitcoin, or $63.05 million as of April 13, 2021. However, the most important ritual in Bitcoin is the halving. The issuance of new Bitcoin occurs according to a fixed schedule. These freshly minted coins are paid to miners, which are the computers that assure that the blocks added to the blockchain are legitimate. To perform this work, miners must spend a huge amount of energy. To cap the total supply at 21 million units, the reward paid to the miners is cut in half every 4 years. Users and investors from all over the world celebrate the halving. This voluntary sacrifice respects the system's hard-coded monetary policy and maintains enforcement of the protocol's rules. 5. Sacred words. Unspent transaction output. Blockchain. Proof of work. Private keys. These are some of the weirdest words that distinguish outsiders from those who belong to the Bitcoin tribe. If you want to be part of this group, you need to learn what these complicated expressions mean. Just don't forget that they may make sense in the context of Bitcoin and nowhere else. 6. Pagans. Every hero needs a villain. For the Bitcoin community, the first type of bad guys would be the Bitcoin bears. Peter Schiff, Nouriel Roubini, and Paul Krugman are some of the most famous. One of the favorite activities of Bitcoin maximalists is combating anyone who claims that Bitcoin will eventually collapse. These hardcore Bitcoiners often behave like a mob on social media. They even build websites entirely dedicated to ridiculing the haters. Bitcoinisdead.lol, 99bitcoins.com's Bitcoin Obituaries, and the Nakamoto Institute's list of the Bitcoin skeptics. There is also a second kind of villain, often considered with more disdain than the bears. The traitors. Seeking influence, fame, or money, they betray the majority and split the network with the help of their followers. This results in a hard fork, which is a non-backwards compatible ramification of the system. Some of these attempts are considered scams, but some are simply the result of people having different views on what kind of problem Bitcoin is supposed to solve. Nonetheless, it is safe to say that staying together and reaching consensus are core values of the Bitcoin ethos. And 7. The leader. Satoshi could enjoy everything that most of us seek in life: fame and money. He is responsible for creating the world's first decentralized electronic monetary system. This is a big deal. However, he chose the path of self-sacrifice. Instead of becoming world famous, he remained anonymous. Furthermore, instead of becoming one of the world's 20th richest people, he decided never to touch his Bitcoin. His pain made Bitcoin's origins immaculate. That is something that no other cryptocurrency can imitate. Conclusion. If we really want to understand Bitcoin, we should approach it not as a pure technological transformation, but rather as a cultural phenomenon. As Yuval Noah Harari states in the book Sapiens, quote, "We humans have this unique ability of mobilizing tribe members towards a common goal. Unlike other animals, we can do this with a large number of individuals and in a flexible way. The belief in shared ideas is what makes this possible. The whole world around us is built upon our collective faith in ethereal concepts like democracy, civil rights, and the government." In the same way, every monetary system is supported by the collective faith that people have in it. This means that we are witnessing a huge paradigm shift. For the first time in human history, people from all over the world are deciding to put their faith in a decentralized platform for storing and transferring value. In a completely spontaneous and leaderless process, Bitcoiners turned the cold content of a technical white paper into a vibrant social movement. This is the secret sauce that made Bitcoin spread like fire. End note. The Voice Paper is a collaborative video recording of the Bitcoin white paper narrated by Bitcoiners. Each contributor recites a section from Satoshi's document and pays their respect to what and who started it all. This project is first and foremost a celebration of the Bitcoin community, of its strength and unity, as well as its broad diversity of backgrounds, origins, and aspirations. It is a statement that Bitcoin belongs to everyone, and the meaning of the Vires in Numeris motto is contextually as computational as it is human. This is a guest post by Paolo Sacramento. Opinions expressed are entirely their own and do not necessarily reflect those of BTC Incorporated or Bitcoin Magazine. All right, quick break for our sponsor. Then I want to talk a little bit. Let's get a guy's take on the Bitcoin brand. You know who wins in the Bitcoin game? The people who look at their savings in sats. The people who see their stack is higher this week than last, not the ones who focus on the dollar price. The price is just noise. Trading is just something that takes a whole lot of work in order to give your Bitcoin to somebody else and pay ungodly amounts of taxes on it when you do. When you could have just been automatically stacking Bitcoin every week, ignoring the fiat measuring stick and watching your sats go up. That is why I use swanbitcoin.com/guy for my referral link to stack sats all the time. Recording an audiobook, I stacked with Swan. Writing notes for my next episode, I stacked with Swan. Reading another 200 Bitcoin articles, well, I also stacked with Swan. Every day, every week, every month, whatever frequency or amount works for you, set it and forget it. It does all the hard work, and you keep doing what you do, knowing that tomorrow you will have more sats than you had yesterday. SwanBitcoin.com/guy will even get you some free sats to start off. This is something that I found really kind of deep in the history of money itself. Because money is largely a social good in a way, it's a networking good in which the monetary premium of an asset is that value that a money accrues outside of what it's actually used for in a market. So when we talk about salt or gold or silver or wampum or rhinestones, whatever it is, these collectibles, these things that develop as monetary goods in the market have this value that's way, way past what it's actually useful for as like an explicit utility. And when you look at gold, gold is such a great example because the previous societies, the great societies of history, had a mythical idea about gold. They held gold as this magical thing, and it was always tied into their religion. There were always these crazy origin stories and this elaborate mythos around gold as being, you know, an element of the gods, so to speak. And that thread that I mentioned in, I think it was in Guy's Take 44, actually, Bitcoin is not what you think it is. There's a really great thread on Twitter talking about the idea of gold as a prerequisite to the great societies, that the stories and the civilizations that adopted gold became great because of that, rather than the other way around. And collective beliefs are so critical to actually enabling the cooperation of mankind, to actually instituting systems and structures of trust that let us accomplish tasks together, that lets us cooperate toward a common goal. And that's what society is, isn't it? It's the very foundation of society that allows us to progress toward a common thing. And money is so critical. It's so critical to that underlying cohesion, I guess, of society. And it's also something that we see it in money itself. Like the island of Yap and the rhinestones are such a good example of merely the valuing of this simple collectible, this incredibly difficult to make thing for its sake and how deeply tied into the religion and the culture it was. And it worked for so long specifically because of that, because it retained the real physical attributes, the actual scarcity of a monetary good that arises naturally in any market. And yet it was also one that was so deeply tied to their culture. It was one that was, I guess you could say, of their own choosing. It actually didn't have any other use. It was just a money. It was just a monetary good. And Bitcoin's belief system is so critical to that. You know, I think a lot of people kind of play it off as a joke and even use it as like a negative thing that, oh, it's a religion, as if that means it's not real or that there's nothing true behind it, that it's all just everybody just whatever we're going to believe, whatever the hell we want to believe. It's used as an insult. And I think it shows a real lack of humility and understanding that their belief in any alternative is exactly the same. Like, that's the nature of money. That is the nature of society. It's just a kind of holier than thou. Oh, it's a religion. Therefore, there's actually nothing really there. The only reason it works is because it's the most popular religion. When really, that's just a way to talk down to hold yourself as holier than thou to Bitcoin or whatever, to that which doesn't align with their own belief system. That maybe Bitcoin was supposed to be a payment system with cheap fees or whatever it is, just using kind of big blockers as an example here. But I encourage you to listen to either the TED Talk by Patrick Hanlon or there's a couple other really good videos on YouTube, as well as Primal Branding, the book, which I actually haven't read. I did listen to his TED Talk and a couple of other things, but I would like to dig into the Primal Branding book. Unfortunately, it's a little bit down on my list right now, but I've done a lot of digging into branding and marketing and that sort of stuff. There's a lot of really fascinating books on just how people relate to the idea of a thing. Apple and Amazon and all of these things that are a lot more than just the actual product that they provide. And that brands are a belief system. They are an idea of what it is that we are getting or joining when we use these systems or products or services or tools that pull us together into a common thing in society. And these books are just really fascinating to me. I love this topic, and it tells us a lot about who we are as people, and it shines so many great lights on how we relate to things in the world. And these seven elements are things that come up in literally every single one that I think is actually worth its salt. All the personal branding things, there's a really great one, or two really great books by Sally Hogshead, which I'm a huge fan of her books. They're really, really interesting. They're titled Fascinate and How the World Sees You. I recommend both of those if anybody kind of wants to dig into this concept. But I want to hit a lot of points real quick that Paolo goes through in this piece, and the seven main elements. So the story of Bitcoin is one of its most powerful elements, in my opinion. The immaculate conception of Bitcoin is just foundational to the idea that Bitcoin has that clean or natural beginning that the rest of the ecosystem simply cannot boast. It's the only one that was actually created in the vacuum or prior to having any preconceived idea that there would be any value that corrupts the very nature of creating the thing in the first place. So this is why there's essentially no fair launch since Bitcoin, is it's almost universally done under the context of, I'm going to print a new money so that I can make tokens and sell them to other people. And explicitly, we're going to market this as solving all the problems of Bitcoin. They can only thrive on basically trying to show why Bitcoin has failed or why Bitcoin is broken or doesn't work in order to market their own thing. They are only even relevant in comparison to Bitcoin. And that's why these things are universally basically scams, is they were done under the explicit context of, I am going to make a crap ton of tokens on a digital spreadsheet and I'm going to sell them for actual money. And the lure, the corruption, the desire, the greed to be the one who creates and controls the money is just astronomical. And there's a token for every damn thing because of that. Any possible tiny nonsense excuse that has been used to differentiate some garbage token from the other set or from Bitcoin or whatever it is has been used. So as stupid as bananas on the blockchain, all of it has been done. And now it's being regurgitated. Now we're on like the 13th coin that's going to solve decentralized file storage. And it's just so obvious this is such a money-making ploy. And all the penny stock casino, token casino chasers will just dump into all of them and absolutely obliterate themselves in the never-ending chase to find that next thing that's going to go 1,000x. It's such a get-rich-quick scheme, and it's such, the whole space just feels like such a scammy mess that even a project that wants so desperately to be honest just seems, it seems impossible for it to not fall victim to this and for it to not have started under exactly this sort of mindset, no matter how much they wish it wasn't the case. And of course, they're all 99% just copy-paste. They're just copying this open source code. So all they have to do is copy, change some parameters, do a new thing, add some new script, and now they're fancy and new and different, and they've got half the block times and twice the block size, blah, blah, whatever the hell it is. And they've completely violated the principle, the ethos of digital scarcity to begin with. They're just copy-pasting the token to have an infinite number of tokens. And this is why there's, not only is there essentially no fair launch since Bitcoin, but also why a lot of people say that digital scarcity is something that can only really be created once. It's a 0-to-1 discovery. And this is something specifically that like Knuts von Holm and Parker Lewis talk about a lot in their works. And I would encourage you, if you haven't listened to like the Parker Lewis's Gradually Then Suddenly series, and then Knuts von Holm's two excellent books, Sovereignty Through Mathematics and Independence Reimagined. Sovereignty Through Mathematics is on the show. You can find pretty much all of this on BitcoinAudible.com if you just search through the library. And Knut has a lot of other great pieces that kind of touch on this in one form or fashion. So I highly recommend those if you want to kind of dig into that idea a little bit deeper. But the ultimate element about that story and about Satoshi is his leaving the project and basically never moving his coins, which kind of touches on the example of the leader in the seventh element, but it's also so important to the origin story of Bitcoin and setting an example for just how important the goal is, the mission of Bitcoin is. That to set the example of the creation of a decentralized, stateless money should be treated as infinitely more important than the fame and money it could bring us is just an epic precedent to have set. And I think Bitcoin is incredibly strong because of that. And then there's the creed. There's the ethos. What does Bitcoin mean? What does it stand for? The secure, borderless, neutral, and censorship resistant. And what's funny is we actually saw kind of an example of this play out just today. Just today, we had the Mara Pool mine their first OFAC compliant block. They gave up a whole lot in fees, which is kind of funny that right off the bat, they're already making a sacrifice, which is part of the game theory of Bitcoin, right? Is that they would end up having to give up on fees in order to censor transactions. But what they're essentially trying to do is, and what they did with the one block, I don't know of a second one that has attempted to do this yet, but I'm keeping a close eye on this. But what they did is they attempted to use only whitelisted addresses, only approved transactions, and they are blacklisting. They are attempting to censor transactions and addresses from sanctioned nations, from coin joins that are connected to these, et cetera, et cetera. They are trying to distinguish that there are certain Bitcoin that are good Bitcoin and certain Bitcoin that are bad Bitcoin, which is a huge threat to the fungibility of the system. The money has to be fungible. One Bitcoin is one Bitcoin. And what's hilarious is that, you know, the Coinbase transaction is public. And they have mined a reward and whatever fees they put in this block, but they can't stop anybody else from sending transactions to it. So numerous people have immediately, within a couple of hours, started sending transactions to this Coinbase block that are from sanctioned countries and that are mixed with sanctioned and blacklisted addresses. And the mining pool can't access that block, can't access that address for 100 blocks. That's built into the code. I'm not sure, you know, for anybody who doesn't know this, this is a thing that Satoshi designed into the system so that miners simply can't mine a block and then peace out. They're actually incentivized to stick around and make sure that the security of the system and the chain itself continues to move forward, because if it doesn't continue for another 100 blocks, they never actually get access to their payout. So they are encouraged to keep, you know, mining blocks in the meantime, and then every new block they get as another 100 block wait. So there's this constant push for stay on the network, keep securing things, and help push Bitcoin forward, help keep it alive. So because of this, there's 100 blocks that they can't even spend their Coinbase transaction, and people could just send sanctioned money and dust all their addresses and anything that's in their mining pool with sanctioned coins or sanctioned addresses or blacklisted addresses and in coin joins and all this stuff. So it's basically obsolete out the gate. They already have a huge problem on their hands and may very well not be able to do this again. That ethos is so critical, that creed of, like, if you even attempt to reintroduce censorship into this, we are going to show you just how stupid of a goal that is and how quickly we will obsolete you. It's epic. It's epic. I just love it. And it was cracking me up. I was loving this. I've had a hard time getting the episode done because I've been trying to follow it and read all the things about it. Then we got number three, the icons. And this is one I wish Paolo, is such a good article. And I wish he'd gone a little bit more into the icons, because I feel like there's a lot of icons around Bitcoin that he didn't really expand on. So obviously there's the orange bee and the Casatius coins that you just see all over the place. Like, that is Bitcoin, right? But there's a lot of more subtle things. There's a lot of more subtle icons and elements that mean Bitcoin, that represent Bitcoin, that constantly emerge and even subside over time. And in the context of, like, the story, like Bitcoin's humble beginnings, what is more iconic than that horrible, crappy drawing of the wizard on the R Bitcoin subreddit? At the beginning of this thing, when R Bitcoin was nothing, and somebody just took out, like, broke out MS Paint and made this garbage wizard. I mean, I have a mug with my Bitcoin wizard on it. And, like, that's deeply iconic, and it's such an expression of, this thing came from truly humble beginnings. This really was the grassroots currency, native currency of the internet, and there's nothing that can recreate that. And then you got laser eyes. How great. I mean, laser eyes are the way, you know, Cynthia Loomis and, like, even other congressional members of Congress were putting on laser eyes, and without even explicitly saying, I'm a Bitcoin supporter or whatever in it, suddenly just people had laser eyes. It's such a fun, there's so many fun, like, social signals, right? Everybody's waving their flag that I'm a Bitcoiner. And there's tons of them, like HODL is that. I mean, granted, that's also kind of like the jargon, and including with the UTXOs and private keys and all of these things. But, you know, memes are typically, I think of memes more as icons, even though they end up kind of being their own words, like have fun staying poor, and acronyms that get used in the Bitcoin space. They are also just a form of icon, even though they are their own language, in a sense. They are the jargon of the Bitcoin ecosystem. And then we have, the Genesis block. Then we have the rituals. Celebrating of the Genesis block, the halving. I mean, this next halving party, like when we come around to the 2024 halving, is going to be absolutely nuts. I really want to be a part of something, or maybe try to make something happen. It's like, the halving is such a cool thing. It's this proof of the protocol, proof that these rules have been codified and there is really nobody who can challenge them. And even though we're lowering the payout, even though the monetary policy is getting more restrictive, there's nothing, like, we celebrate it because it's independent. It's proof that this thing isn't a political tool to benefit somebody. It is a collective good. It is something that is for the benefit of everyone at no explicit person's, you know, Kantian benefit. There is no leader. There is no actual control. There is no privileged position. We are all playing by the same rules, and the halving is proof of this. No matter how much somebody wants more Bitcoin or wishes that they could be the one that mines a little bit more than somebody else, we are all equal before the halving. But there's tons of Bitcoin holidays. On the cryptoeconomy.com/, was it calendar, I think? On the crypto, on my website, I have a whole collection of holidays, and I celebrate all of them. You know, it's funny how many holidays that I have absolutely no connection to. And it's like, these are at least meaningful to me. Like, most of the stuff I lived through or, you know, has a huge effect on my life. I mean, I still do Christmas and, you know, some major holidays, but all that stupid crap in between, what the hell does any of that have to do with me? Bitcoin holidays are way better holidays, in my opinion. And they serve like a real purpose. Like, Genesis Block Day is also Proof of Keys Day. It's like withdrawal, like know that you have the power to prove beyond any question that you are holding the keys to your money and that nobody in the world can challenge that. You know, take that day to withdraw, that you don't hold an IOU from somebody else. Hold your keys. But then the kind of last thing that I wanted to touch on that I couldn't quite figure out where this fit in to the primal branding, the seven brand elements, I guess you could say. It probably fits under creed. And Paolo kind of hits on it, or like kind of touches on it in this. And specifically, Patrick Hanlon talks about this in his TED Talk. But the idea of the mission, the vision of the future that is attached to this, and I think that's absolutely one of its most powerful elements. And maybe that's part of its story, its creed. Maybe that's kind of the culmination of all of the seven things and what they mean. But there's a very particular promise of Bitcoin. And that promise is to remove money from the nature of being a tool to manipulate and control the people. A political tool, a weapon against someone else, and instead making it a collective good decided upon and secured by the people. It is to return money to that place of being a set of independent rules with no rulers. And the reason I think these seven elements of Bitcoin, that this vision of Bitcoin is so strong, and why I think it actually won't be corrupted, is that it's, in a sense, a set of rules because it is codified, because the protocol embodies those rules. It's as if we have a story and a mission that's being codified or written in a way in which the meaning cannot change. You know, something like a constitution can always be interpreted differently, and you can have so many seemingly clear comments that one person under a separate bias will interpret exactly how it works best for them. And even the same words can come to mean something just a few years later that has nothing to do with its original context. You can always manipulate the way things are. And this is why law is such a finicky thing, something that always grows towards greater control, towards more centralization, is because no matter what you do, you cannot stop the interpretation of it from evolving to feed or to back up the desires of the people interpreting it. There's no way for it to always mean exactly what it was intended to mean. But Bitcoin has fundamentally changed that. The consensus rules don't care about our interpretation of them. They are hard-coded. They are explicit. There is an absolute mathematical certainty about when that consensus has been violated and when it has not. And because of that, the elements around it, its story, its ethos, are mere extensions of something that is real, something that is actually codified and unalterable. Which is why there's actually a chance that this thing could survive for an exceptionally long amount of time. That this could be a set of rules, a system of equal power, and something built for the people that actually use it to make society a better place and to give us a totem where we can all communicate and own value that has no political center, that has no one benefit greater than anyone else, that is even anti-fragile in the case or in the face of an adversary or of some change. It can actually evolve within its own consensus rules to defend itself from changes in the world. It is the DNA of a better society. And that mission, that vision of the future that we're all, it's not all just hopeless. It's not all just going to get worse. We actually have a solution to some of the fundamental, the absolute largest problems of today's society sitting right in front of us that we can play around with, that we can build on top of, that is available right now, today. And so many people are missing that. That's why you have evangelists. That's why you have people that do nothing but talk about it all day, day in and day out, and tell all their friends and family about it, because there's hope that we can actually fix some of this shit. But anyway, I thought this was a really great piece. Such a fun concept to talk about. I love the idea of like the kind of anthropological nature of a vision, the system of belief around Bitcoin, because it really is interesting and it's core to so many things that are human. Like humanity is so deeply based upon the beliefs and the understandings and the visions we have for the future that we hold together. And it's just a fascinating topic. So huge thank you to Paolo for putting this together. A great piece. He's actually got a copy. It was on Medium. I found it on Medium before they posted it on Bitcoin Magazine. I'll post both links. But if you want to go give it some applause on his Medium page, definitely do. Don't forget to thank our wonderful sponsors and check out their amazing products. The Bitbox O2 hardware wallet. If you want to, you got to hold your own keys. And if you celebrate the Genesis block, the Proof of Keys Day, you got to have a hardware wallet that securely holds your keys. Get yourself a Bitbox O2. And of course, you should be stacking all year, all the time, no matter what the price is, no matter what the market's doing, with swanbitcoin.com. Do it automatically. And it's just, that's how you do it. That's how you do it. That's the easiest way. It's just a no-brainer. Check them both out at guyswan.com. They're right there at the top of the page. Thank you so much for listening. For today's Bitcoin resource, I know I haven't really done that a lot lately, but everybody go to taproot.watch. This is how you're going to keep up on the Taproot activation. We are in the midst of the soft fork. We are getting through the first difficulty adjustment period right now. We're almost at 50% signaling already. I think we're going to be able to lock this in. Everybody bug the hell out of your local mining pool or any miners that you know to make sure they are signaling for Taproot. Let's do this. Let's get it activated quick and cleanly so that we don't have to UASF any belligerent or lazy miners. I prefer just go through. Let's just do this once and be done with it. With that, guys, thank you so much. And thank you for voting for this piece on bitcoinaudible.com/vote. If you have another one up there that you really want to listen to, let me know. Probably all of them are coming soon. It's just a great way to let me know which one you want to hear next. With that, this is Bitcoin Audible. Thank you so much for listening. I am Guy Swan, and until next time, everybody, take it easy. This has been a 111 production, and you were listening to Bitcoin Audible on the Cryptoeconomy Network.